Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. Today, we're going to talk about some NBA playoffs. As always, I will give the updated Major League Baseball standings. We'll talk what the playoffs would look like if the season ended today. And then I want to spend a good amount of time today talking about baseball. So I don't want to get into a lot of detail right now because I'm going to talk about it later in the podcast, but I want to talk about the no-hitters, the home runs, and what is going on with the baseballs used in the major leagues. It's something that kind of came up. It came up last week in discussion with some friends, and throughout the week, this week, I thought on it. We talked about it. I watched some stuff, I researched some stuff, and thought it would be a good thing to talk about. An interesting topic, I guess, to talk about on the podcast and see what changes have been made, see what players think of it. And as one openly spoke out this week, and just kind of look at some stats in major leagues and see what's actually happening. So I will most likely cover that in the second half of the podcast. But yeah, definitely something interesting I wanted to get into and discuss. So let's start with the NBA. I know almost every episode I've had, I've talked about the NFL or college football. I don't really have anything for you today. So unfortunately, if that's what you're looking for, there's not really much going on there right now. I mean, I will browse through the NFL headlines, but as far as college goes, nothing really going on. You know, we're in the middle of spring practice. We're in the middle of spring practices, getting ready to go into the summer. So I'd say really in terms of new big news for college football, there won't be much in the next couple of months. Probably August, September, that'll start ramping up. The biggest news out of the NFL really is Julio Jones. And honestly, that pains me. Because, again, I am an Atlanta Falcons fan. So, seeing all the hype about him leaving Atlanta, I get it. It makes sense. You know, he's getting older. He is injury prone. His contract should be coming up soon. So, I get it. But when he is on the field, he is still one of, if not the best wide receiver on the field when he's playing. I've seen some things about him going to New England. I've seen some things about him going to San Francisco. I've seen some things about him going to Arizona. DeAndre Hopkins came out and said that he would renegotiate his salary, rework his contract. Now, do I think Julio and DeAndre would work on the same team? Absolutely not. They both need the ball. That's why being on a team like Atlanta works. You've got Calvin Ridley. Yeah, that works. You can get the ball to both of them. And it's not a huge deal. But on the flip side of that, again, with the injury issues, the financial aspect of it, I get Atlanta's side of it too by possibly letting him go or trading him. The other big news is Tim Tebow returns to the NFL, signs a deal with the Jaguars as a tight end. Notably, I guess, not so notably, he'll be wearing the number 85. So for you Tebow fans, get your number 85 jerseys. From Jacksonville. No certainty that he will make the team. All right, understand that. Just because he signed a deal does not mean that he's going to make the final roster. All right, he is going there through camp to basically try out as a tight end. Now, I would say it's probably a good or a high chance that he makes the roster. But there is that chance that this does not work out. Other than that, NFL-wise, there's not a lot going on. Some comparisons of Justin Herbert to Peyton Manning. We'll see. All right, it's way too soon. Julio Jones to the Chargers would help him out significantly, but let's kind of hold off on that talk for now. Okay, so that's the NFL in a nutshell. So let's talk NBA playoffs, and let's talk what has happened with the play-in tournament. So on Tuesday, we had the Pacers, who I believe were the 9th seed. Potentially. I'm not sure what seed they were. But in the play-in games, the Pacers beat the Hornets. Again, this goes back to the no defense in the NBA thought, in that the Pacers scored 144 points against the Hornets. And then the Celtics, that was behind 14 points, 21 rebounds, and 9 assists from Sabonis of Indiana. Meanwhile, Miles Bridges with Charlotte was their top performer, 23 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. And then we had the Celtics beat the Wizards. Behind Jason Tatum's 50 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. And Russell Westbrook led the Wizards with 20 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists. So that meant that the Celtics had clinched the number 7 seed in the playoffs. And then the Pacers and the Wizards then would play for the 8 seed. All right, so then we go on to Wednesday and we go out to the West. And we had the Grizzlies beat the Spurs by 4 points. And that was behind 23 points, 23 rebounds, and 1 assist from Memphis' center. I would give you his name, but I couldn't pronounce that if I tried. And then San Antonio was led by Murray, 10 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists. So a triple-double, falls short by 4 points. And then the Lakers, they win against the Warriors 103-100. LeBron, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. So a triple-double for LeBron. Steph Curry with 37 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. So that meant that the Lakers had clinched the 7 seed, and then the Grizzlies and Warriors would play for the 8 seed. From there, on Thursday then, we had the final play-in game for the East Conference, and the Wizards beat up on the Pacers, realistically, 142-115. Now, again, 115, that's a lot of points to score in a basketball game. But they got beat by almost 30 points still. That was behind 18 points, 8 rebounds, 15 assists from Russell Westbrook. And then Sabonis again for Indiana, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. So another triple-double. So that's four out of the 5 games so far, there's been a triple-double, 2 of which were in losing matchups. And then last night we had the Grizzlies and the Warriors. Game went to overtime. And Ja Morant had a spectacular showing, 35 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists for the second-year player. Steph Curry, 39 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists as the Grizzlies clinch the 8 seed. So that gives us our 16 teams for the playoffs. So let's take a look now at kind of a rundown of the 16 teams we have here. Who has a chance? Who is pretty much going to get destroyed in the first game? Obviously, there's a lot of ups and downs with that. So I'm going to go team by team here. We'll give some notes on each one. So let's start in the East Conference. As soon as my webpage comes back up, there we go. So in the East Conference, the number one seed, the 76ers. 49-23 record. And they're facing against Washington in the 1-8 seed. So the biggest concern here, can the team score enough? So you're playing Washington, right? You're playing against Russell Westbrook, who is a triple-double, you know, routinely, and Bradley Beal, who is a top player. Now, of course, you have Joel Embiid, who's up for MVP, and Ben Simmons. But they are an injury-prone team. And, I mean, historically, this team specifically with Embiid and Simmons has not played well in the playoffs. They do have the second-ranked defense, but only the 13th-ranked offense. So it'll be interesting to see how they play. Matchup to watch in the first round, how does their perimeter defense play against Bradley Beal? Again, Bradley Beal is another player who has struggled lately, but he can still absolutely control a game. Realistically, this game here is a battle of which team can finally succeed. You've got the 76ers, you've got the Wizards, both have struggled in the playoffs in the recent past. The playoff ceiling for the 76ers, NBA champion. I'll agree with that. They are in the Eastern Conference. I'd say they are one of three teams, and I'll agree with that. That's what this article says as well. They're one of three teams that could easily make it to the NBA Finals. The other two being obviously Brooklyn and then Milwaukee. So the good thing for the 76ers is that they wouldn't have to play either Brooklyn or Milwaukee until the Eastern Conference Finals. So that's good. With that being said, with both of those teams, with them not having to face either of those teams until the Eastern Conference Finals, it should be an easy road for Philadelphia to reach the Eastern Conference Finals, which is something they have not done in 20 years. So we're going back to Iverson days. Sad to think that was already 20 years ago. But that was the last time Philadelphia reached the Eastern Conference Finals. All right, let's look at the Brooklyn Nets. 48-24 record. Obviously, the notes here, you know, you've got Durant, you've got Harden, you've got Kyrie. Not really much else to say there. The biggest concern is, again, the injury problems. Can they make it through without any injuries? The fewest games a championship team's top three scorers have played together in a regular season is 10. And that was the 2000-2001 Lakers played just 10 games with Kobe, Shaq, and Derek Fisher all on the court. And, of course, this does not give the number for how many that Durant, Harden, and Irving all played together. Matchup to watch, how to stop Jason Tatum. So you've got the Nets against the Celtics. Jason Tatum dropped 50 points against the Wizards. He's had a 60-point game this season, finished 10th in the league in scoring. Most likely, he will be guarded by Durant. So we'll see how that goes. Durant is a 2-time Finals MVP. And again, their playoff ceiling is NBA champions. I've heard it said that for this team, the Brooklyn Nets, they are championship or bust. I would agree with that. This team is made to win a championship, right? You had Kyrie already. You brought in Kyrie, you brought in Durant, and then now you've brought in James Harden. You don't do that to make it to the conference finals and lose. You bring that team together to win an NBA championship. If all three can play on the court, this should be an easy route to the NBA Finals, even with teams like Milwaukee and Philadelphia there. The Nets are 18-2 in games where Harden has played clutch time minutes. So that's significant. With an effective field goal percentage of 59%. So yeah, they are championship or bust, in my opinion. All right, the 3 seed is Milwaukee. They'll be facing Miami. Biggest concern. The last two playoffs have not been kind to them, obviously. They struggled to keep up with Toronto and Miami during last season's playoffs. Let's see. It's hard to know what's gonna happen here. Obviously, Giannis is the best player on the floor in almost every series, I would say. Yeah, I'd agree with that. He wasn't against Toronto last season, and he wasn't against Miami. He will need to be the best for the Bucks to reach their ceiling. Matchup to watch is Giannis versus Miami's defense. So this is a rematch of last year in the second round, where Miami handled Milwaukee very easily. Miami was able to frustrate and control Giannis and guard him very well. And then, of course, Giannis sprained his ankle and missed the end of the series. So seeing how he holds up against their defense this year will show what's going to happen there. Now, they say the playoff ceiling for the Bucks is NBA champion. But that means they have to beat both Brooklyn first and then Philadelphia, most likely, unless there's an upset. I would say barring upset, that is a very minimal chance. I say their playoff ceiling would be conference finals at best. And the only way that happens is if the Nets have some kind of injury troubles. So that's my opinion. Take it for what it is. The Bucks are the first team to average at least 120 points per game since the 84-85 Nuggets. And I talked about that in a previous episode about just the overall height, I guess, of scoring and how it's progressed over the past 10 years. Entering this season, 22 teams have averaged 120 points per game in a season. Only 4 of those have won a championship. The 72 Lakers, the 67 76ers. Wow, that's a tongue twister. So the 72 LA Lakers, the 67 Philadelphia 76ers, and then the 1960 and the 1962 Boston Celtics. So 4 teams out of 22 have won a championship, averaging 120 points plus a game. Number 4 seed, the New York Knicks playing against Atlanta. So the biggest concern, they have no postseason experience. You're talking about guys like Julius Randle, RJ Barrett. Now, Derrick Rose obviously has playoff experience. But the Knicks starters have played a combined 16 total playoff games. Nerlens Noel has competed in 12 postseason contests, and Reggie Bullock has appeared in 4. So, Derrick Rose isn't the starter. The Knicks have been exceptional in close games to end the regular season, going 9-2 in clutch games since April 9th. And that is second best in the NBA in that time frame. But we'll see really how this goes. Provided that they beat Atlanta in the first round, they would then have to face most likely Philadelphia in the second round. So again, barring upsets, barring something crazy, I don't see it really happening. Matchups to watch: Randle versus the bigs, and their coaches plan for Trae Young. So Randall versus Clint Capela and John Collins, and then how to handle Trae Young. So Randall's been a force against the Hawks this season, scoring 40 points, 44 points, and 28 points in their three matchups, which the Knicks won all three. Capela and Collins could be tasked with containing him. So we'll see how it works this time. Trae Young has shot 36.2% against the Knicks in the regular season, his second lowest against any team that he played at least three times. So there's that note. Their playoff ceiling is a second-round exit. I'll agree with that. Again, the Knicks are 3-0 against Atlanta, and that's who they play in the first round. But again, most likely, barring some crazy upset, they're facing the 76ers in the second round. They're not winning that game. The 5-seed Atlanta, biggest concern is their playoff inexperience. So Atlanta-New York is a game of new teams, new players. Both teams, the biggest concern is their playoff inexperience. Of their top five scorers, only Clint Capela has ever appeared in the playoffs. So that's interesting. Matchup to watch is the battle of the second units. So when Trae Young isn't on the court, it's Bogdanović, however you pronounce his name, that's been playing the majority of his minutes. The Hawks have outscored opponents by 3.9 points per 100 possessions with Bogdanović on and Young off since the All-Star break. So that's not terrible, but you're playing against a New York bench that ranks second in reserve scoring on a per minute basis. Of course, facing off against Derrick Rose, who averages 14.8 points per game coming off the bench. So their playoff ceiling is a second round exit. Again, they're pretty much saying Atlanta, New York is a toss up. Either team could win. I heard Mike Greenberg yesterday say that literally he could see this go anyway. He could see it being Atlanta winning in a short series, New York winning in a short series, or it going in seven games and either team coming out on top. There's no real way to read this game. Miami is the sixth seed, biggest concern. Obviously, they had that nice little bubble run last year. Thanks to Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic. But Hero has missed several weeks with a foot injury this year. And has struggled pretty much all season. Matchup to watch, a new point guard to deal with. Bucks guard Jrue Holiday presents Miami a major challenge the Heat didn't see during last season's playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how Jimmy Butler plays against Holiday and how they can handle Giannis and Chris Middleton. Their playoff ceiling is a second round exit. Playing against the Bucks, I'm going to say yes, they could pull off the upset, and that is the upset pick if you're going to pick one in the Eastern Conference. I don't see it happening, though. Boston is the seventh seed. Again, they're facing Brooklyn. It'd be a great story, but it's just not going to happen. Matchup to watch is a Tatum-Durant scoring duel. Now, that will be fun to watch, seeing how Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant play off against each other. Their playoff ceiling is first-round fodder. Yes, the Celtics are not making it past this round. Pretty much call it a done deal. And then again, the 8-seed Washington Wizards. Matchup to watch, Westbrook versus Embiid. So there is some history there. There's some tension, intensity, energy. Those two do not like each other. So it'll be interesting to see because they are both ticking time bombs. They are both high energy guys. So it'll be interesting to see how they play out against each other. And they'll be out in the first round. So my picks for those four games, I would say Milwaukee wins. They'll face New York in the second round. And then obviously Philadelphia and New York will face off in the second round. Milwaukee and Brooklyn will face off in the second round. Your conference finals would be Philadelphia against Brooklyn, with Brooklyn going to the NBA finals. That's my prediction for the Eastern Conference. All right, Western Conference, and I got to kind of blow through this kind of quickly here. The Utah Jazz, as the one seed, matchup to watch, Rudy Gobert versus Jonas, the center for, who are they playing? Memphis. I would also say Ja Morant against Donovan Mitchell. But we'll see. Playoff ceiling, NBA champion. I don't think the Jazz are good enough to win the championship, but I could see them somehow making it to the finals. Phoenix gets to play the Lakers in the first round. Biggest concern, again, inexperience. Chris Paul, Jay Crowder have been here, but overall they don't have the experience. Matchup to watch, LeBron and AD versus the Suns defense. That will be a good matchup. Their playoff ceiling is a run to the finals. Again, I could see that. I could see the upset happening here. And yes, I know they are the 2 seed and the Lakers are the 7 seed. And yet still we're calling this an upset if the 2 seed wins. It's sad. It's crazy. But I could see the Suns doing it. Even with LeBron and AD and Lakers being the defending champions, coming in as the 7 seed, playing on the road, injury issues, I could see a possibility of the Suns pulling out of this. All right, the 3 seed is Denver. They're going to be playing Portland. Biggest concern, does Jokic have enough help? Jokic is one of the obvious choices for NBA MVP this year. But does he have enough help against Portland? Playoff ceiling, conference finalist. I'll agree with that. 4 seed is the Clippers. They will be facing Dallas. Matchup to watch, their defense against Luka. Playoff ceiling is NBA champion. I'll talk about that here in a minute. I'll just go ahead and say it. The Clippers are not championship material. Yes, Kawhi did it with Toronto. Yes, Paul George is a good player. These two are not going to lead the Clippers to a championship. Now, could it happen? It could. The West, obviously, the West is kind of a wild, I don't really want to steal everyone's phrase by calling it the Wild Wild West. But it is a wild conference. It is an unpredictable conference right now. It could happen. I just don't see it. And playing against Luka, man, that's going to be difficult. But again, just like with Denver, does Jokic have enough help? With Dallas, does Luka have enough help? Their playoff ceiling is a second round exit. And yes, that I could see that. Portland playing against Denver. Lillard versus Aaron Gordon. Playoff ceiling is a second round exit. Let's see. The Lakers. Biggest concern is injuries. If either LeBron or AD comes up injured, they're done. And they've shown that all year. Their playoff ceiling is NBA championship. Again, That's obvious. Their playoff ceiling is the NBA champion. As a 7 seed, it's obvious with those two players. Can they overcome the injuries? And that's a big question. And then Memphis, their ceiling would be first round fodder. Yeah. All right. So in the Western Conference, I will take Utah against, man, I don't know. Do I take Dallas or do I take, I have to take the Clippers. As much as I want to root for Luka, I just don't know if he can do it by himself. So we'll go Utah, Clippers in the second round. And then we'll take Denver. Man, as much as I really want to root for the Suns, I just don't know. I don't know if any team in the West can really beat the Lakers. You know what? I'm going to make somebody mad here, but I'm going to go with it. I'm going to say the Suns upset the Lakers. So then the Suns would play against Denver, and I think the Suns win that game as well. And I think Utah beats the Clippers. And then Utah goes to the championship. So we have Utah against Brooklyn in the NBA Finals, and Brooklyn will win the finals out of that. Now, also as a sidebar, a secondary pick, I guess I could say, is the Lakers end up beating Philadelphia or beating Phoenix, and then they go to the finals. So in the backup, if LA beats the Suns, then the Lakers are going to the championship. I'll say it. So that would make it as Denver against LA with the Lakers winning that, and then the Lakers against Utah in the conference finals with the Lakers winning it. So there's that. I'm going to take a quick break, and I will be right back. And welcome back. And we are going to jump right into Major League Baseball. So we'll spend the rest of the episode today talking baseball. Before I get into the whole situation involving the baseball itself, let's do our playoff standings. Let's do our playoff predictions, what it looks like right now. So let's run through real quick what the 6 weeks have looked like so far. In the American League, let's see. I'm trying to see if any team has been in there every week. Boston is the only team that has been in somewhere in the playoff seeding every week of the 6 weeks so far. They were the wild card number 2 in week 1. They were the 1 seed in week 2, the 3 seed in week 3, the 1 seed in week 4, the 2 seed in week 5, and the 2 seed in week 6. Other than that, though, I mean, the Astros have been in it twice. The Twins have been in it once. The Orioles once. The Angels twice. The Mariners 3 times. The Royals 3 times. The Indians twice. Oakland 4 times. The White Sox 4 times. I think that's it. In the National League, let's see. I don't know that any team. Yeah, there's been no teams. Oh, just kidding. The Padres are the only team that have been in the playoff seeding every week. And funny enough, they've been in the wild card every week, going back and forth, mostly as the wild card 2, But they did have 2 weeks in a row now where they were wild card one. So let's look at what we have in week seven. So in the American League, the one seed, actually Boston overtook the White Sox. So Boston is back to the one seed. And that's by a game and a half. So the two seed would then be the White Sox. And they would face the Athletics. And then the wild cards. So we Tampa Bay, actually. This is Tampa's first time in the playoffs. That's wild card one. And then we have a tie between the Yankees and Houston. So I've been going to run scored as the tiebreaker. And Houston actually has it by almost 70 runs. So Houston is wild card two. So the Yankees are on the verge of making the playoff seeding for the first time this season. But they fall just short again this year. All right, National League. The one seed is the Giants, and they're actually tied with the Padres for that one seed. The only difference is that San Francisco does have them by two runs. So San Francisco keeps the one seed again. And that is 3 of the last 4 weeks they have been the one seed. And that's one thing I was just talking about with a couple buddies of mine is how they are the one seed in the National League. When you have teams like St. Louis, you have teams like Atlanta, San Diego, the Dodgers. I mean, two of those in your own division, and you're still up there. Now, I will say they are being challenged. San Diego is now tied with them for the top of the division, and the Dodgers are only one game out. So that could change by next week. All right, the two seed is St. Louis. And the three seed is the Mets. And then the wild card teams, the Padres and the Dodgers. So again, San Diego in the wild card matchup. So three things changed from last week to this week. In the American League, Boston and Chicago switched spots, and Tampa overtook Cleveland as the top wild card. And in the National League, nothing changed. Everything stayed the same. All right, so my prediction. I am going to go. It's a coin flip in the American League, honestly, between Boston and Chicago. But I've gone with Boston 3 of the last 4 weeks, with the one being Chicago. Boston is doing really good things right now. Both teams are 6-4 in their last four games. Boston's won 3 in a row. The White Sox lost 1. Boston has them in runs scored. Chicago's the better home team. Boston's the better road team. I'm going to go with the White Sox. And then the National League, I'm going to do something that I don't think I've done one other time. And that is take a wild card team to go to the World Series. And that's the Padres. I'm going to go with the Padres for the first time to the World Series. It's an intriguing matchup. Tatis is really playing well. We'll see how it goes. All right, let's jump in. I've been itching to jump into this because I have so many opinions on this and thoughts on this. Because it goes both ways. All right, so let's talk about this baseball situation. So here is what Here's what stemmed the beginning of this conversation. All right. So on May 19th, well, I guess May 18th, Spencer Turnbull for the Detroit Tigers threw a no-hitter. The very next day, Corey Kluber of the Yankees threw a no-hitter. So that brings us to 6 no-hitters this season. Now, interesting note, 2 of those no-hitters have been against the Rangers, Texas. 2 have been against Cleveland, and 2 have been against Seattle. And outside of Corey Kluber, none of these pitchers that have thrown a no-hitter are top-of-the-line aces, in my opinion. So 6 no-hitters this season. Technically, 7. However, Madison Bumgarner's 7-inning shutout or no-hitter does not count because according to MLB rules, it has to be a full game, a full 9-inning game. You have to face 27. I think it's you have to face 27 batters. So there's that. The most no-hitters in a season is 8 in 1884. In the modern era, the record is 7, which has occurred 3 times in 1990, 1991, and 2012. So 7 in the modern era no hitters in a season. We are in at the end of month 2 and we're at 6. So that number is going to get shattered. There have been 310 no hitters officially recognized by the MLB in the league's history. The first no hitter, trivia question for you, the first no hitter in history was thrown in 1876. Now, on the flip side of this, the last perfect game was August 15th of 2012, and it was thrown by Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners. There have been 21 perfect games thrown in MLB history. So we are blowing through no-hitters like crazy. 6 already in 2 months. So on Thursday, Clayton Kershaw was interviewed. This was right after Wednesday night's Yankees no-hitter and Tuesday night's Tigers no-hitter. So I'll just read you part of this article before I get to what he said. No-hitters are exciting. This is CBS Sports. Their thoughts on this. No-hitters are exciting and extremely cool, but so many no-hitters in such a short period of time threatens to oversaturate fans and cheapen the accomplishment. Kluber's no-hitter featured only 4 hits for the winning team and never more than 1 in an inning. His pursuit of history overshadowed a decided lack of action overall. Now, we get to Clayton Kershaw. He believes that the abundance of no-hitters is bad for the sport and that MLB is to blame with its new deadened baseball. So here's what he said. Here's what Clayton Kershaw said. He said, well, it's not good. I'll tell you that. I think whatever the intention was with the new ball or whatever it may be, it really hasn't done anything. There might be less home runs, which I guess they want, but I don't know the stats on all that. But I do know that strikeouts are the same. I think I saw some stats of April that it was the worst hitting month in the history of something. No-hitters are cool. I have all the respect in the world for Corey Kluber and Bum and all those guys that have thrown no-hitters, but to have one happen every night, it seems like it's probably not good for the game. Fans want to see some hits. I get that, and some action, and not many people striking out. I appreciate the attempt the MLB has tried to do, but I think it seems like they missed the mark so far. We'll see. I don't know. Those are the words from Clayton Kershaw. Now, Kershaw has a no-hitter to his credit, and one day he will go into the Hall of Fame. I don't doubt that. If anyone should want more no-hitters, you would think it would be a Hall of Fame pitcher. But he called out the MLB for the lack of action, and he's correct. The league is hitting 236 The batting average for the entire league is 236 this year. That would be, if that holds true, that would be the lowest batting average in history. The league hit 237 in 1968, which is the year before the MLB lowered the mound. MLB deadened the baseball this season with the intention of lowering the skyrocketing home run rate and forcing hitters to focus on contact. The home run rate has decreased. There are 1.14 homers per game right now, down from 1.28 last year and 1.39 in 2019. But strikeouts are way up. 24.1% of plate appearances end in a strikeout, which would be a record. Partly because the new seam or the seams on the new ball allow for a better grip and a better spin. The intention was good, but hitters were never going to make that adjustment overnight. To date, all the new baseball has done is turn a bunch of home runs into flyouts and increase spin and strikeout rates. 6 no-hitters in 7 weeks is a bit fluky no matter the offensive environment, though it is telling. Getting a simple base hit has never been as difficult as it is right now. Now, I will agree with everything that was said in that article. Because no-hitters are very exciting. But I would rather watch a no-hitter on TV than to be there in person. Because I'm telling you, from experience, being in a stadium, you want action. So if Major League Baseball's intent here was to increase TV ratings, I think they might be getting somewhere. And maybe it is because you had a year where not many fans are allowed in this. You know, we had the year last year where no fans were allowed in stadiums. This year we're starting to get to where we can have full capacity again. So you did want to boost the TV ratings. I get that. I do. I 100% understand that mentality. But now that fans are back in the stadium, you have to do something to make it exciting for the fans. Fans do not want to sit through strikeout after strikeout after strikeout unless you're wanting the Reds to get the slices, strikeouts for slices. Hey, look, I look for that every Reds game I go to. 11 strikeouts in a game, you get a free pizza from the Roses. 100%, I'm all for that. But on the flip side of that, I also want some kind of action. I want home runs. I want gappers. I want hits down the line. That excitement of those extra base hits and those bang bang plays at second and third base. Yeah, seeing a no-hitter would be cool, but I'd rather watch that on TV than be there in person. Too many no-hitters does oversaturate. I will agree with that. The fact that we are at 6 already in 7 weeks is too much. And the batting average being so low for the year is not good. Now, here's the article from before the season about the altering of baseballs. So this came out February 8th of this year. Major League Baseball will alter the baseball slightly in 2021, though the changes will be subtle. A memo sent to all 30 clubs cited an independent lab that found new balls will fly 1 to 2 feet shorter on balls hit over 375 feet. Now that is just crazy that they can do that to a baseball, that you can control how far it goes. So they're saying that if you hit a ball over 375 feet, that the ball will fly 1 to 2 feet shorter. That's too much for my brain to understand. In 2019, the league saw a record of 6,776 home runs. The home run rate fell from 6.6 percent of plate appearances in 2019 to 6.5% during the shortened 2020 season. Following the 2019 season, a committee of scientists commissioned by MLB came to the determination that the baseballs had less drag on average than in previous seasons. One of the reasons for the boost in home runs. One key was inconsistencies in the height of the seams on the baseball. So if you're listening to me and you don't know what that means, the seams on the baseball is what allows the pitchers to get that good grip on it. That is what really helps you to have a good slider, a good curveball. It changes your rotation on your two-seam fastball. Having an inconsistency in the height of your seams, if you're a pitcher, is a struggle for sure. MLB balls are hand-sewn by workers at the Rawlings factory in Costa Rica, which can result in minor deviations in production. The league requires all baseballs to have a coefficient of restitution, what they call a COR. So in simple terms, the bounciness of the ball, ranging from 530 to 570. Sorry, 0.530 to 0.570. Okay, I'm not going to get into all that talk just because I can feel somebody's eyes glazing over right now as I'm talking about it. So let me get through this real quick. Basically, what Rawlings did is they loosened the tension inside the ball. So that will lessen the ball's weight by about 2.8 grams without changing its actual size. So they didn't think that would change much. Well, here we are, and it has changed a lot. The AP also reported that the number of teams using humidors to store baseballs will double from 5 to 10 this season, keeping the balls in humidity-controlled storage areas. The Rockies, Diamondbacks, Mariners, Mets, and Red Sox already have humidity-controlled storage areas in their respective ballparks. Okay, so with that being said, the Rockies, the D-backs, the Mariners, the Mets, and the Red Sox. So I want to look at those teams, where they stand in the home run category this season. So Boston was on there. They rank number 5. They're the 5th highest team in home runs. I need to write this down real quick. So Colorado, Boston, Arizona, Seattle, and New York Mets. So Boston ranks 5th. With 61 home runs on the season. Seattle ranks 15th with 51 home runs this season. 61, 51. Arizona ranks 18th with 49. Colorado ranks 22nd with 44. And the New York Mets ranked 29th with 30 home runs. So I don't think that really – I was hoping that would give me a determination of what effect the humidity-controlled environment is having on the baseballs. But it's not having an effect because you have teams ranging from 61 to 30 home runs this season. Now on the flip side, let's look at the pitching with those teams. So we will go by ERA, team ERA. So the New York Mets rank sixth at 3.28. The Red Sox rank 12th, 3.88. The Mariners rank 21st at 4.53. Arizona 27th and Colorado 28th. 491 and 494. So that proves to me that has no effect on the baseball. It's not controlling anything. Because you're ranging from 3.28 to 4.94 in ERA. So there's no real difference in the baseball for these teams. Okay, now let's look at the flip side of this. So we're seeing an increase in no hitters. Sorry, completely lost my train of thought there. We're seeing an increase in no hitters. But then on the flip side, let's look at the home run statistics real quick. For the teams. So it does not give me, I was really hoping it was going to give me an overall number. I have to do this real quick because I need to know what the overall number of home runs is right now in Major League Baseball. Okay. So we have 61, 51, 63, 51, 41, 72. I just want to do this math real quick because I want to see how many, and I'm sure there's a website somewhere that tells me. But I'm already here, so. I want to know what we're looking at right now. Okay, we're at 1,573 home runs at pretty much almost the end of May. 1,573. Now the record was 6,776, I believe. So we have April, May, June, July, August, September. So let's say 6 months. So let's divide that by 6 months. That's 1,129 per month. Right now we're at 786.5 per month home runs. So let's times that by six. We should be sitting at 4,019 home runs this season if the average stays where it is right now. So that's 2,000 home runs less than what we had in 2019, which is the record. Okay, that's what I wanted to see. So yes, we are seeing that. But then we have another report from last night. Atlanta Braves become the first team to hit at least 7 home runs, including 2 grand slams in one game. So I'm still seeing a lot of home runs being hit, and we're still hearing about a lot of home runs being hit. And so, yeah, we're seeing more no-hitters. And, yes, we're going to see less home runs overall this season. But it's hard to see. It's hard to think about. I'm trying to get a quick stat here of what the average home runs per year is. Now, again, this is a big change up from what we are used to. Okay, so before 2019, there was only one season with 6,000 home runs, and that was 2017. Now let's look at the 1998 season, which was the big home run season. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. 1998, there was 5,064 home runs. That was in the middle of a big home run battle. And yet we were still 1,700 home runs less than what we had 2 years ago. Whatever they're doing, I don't like. I have no clue what I just brought up. But I see names on here that don't make sense. Okay. Somehow I've tried to pull up the current MLB stats, and I had the top 10 players were all Barry Bonds and Babe Ruth. I was very confused. Okay, there it is. I'm all for no hitters. I am. I like it. It's a cool stat. Not as high as they are now. I want to see home runs. Nothing makes a ballpark environment better than home runs. I think baseball is going the wrong direction. If we're going to start allowing fans back into stadiums, then we need home runs to be hit. I would love to see another home run battle. I would love to see somebody knock off Barry Bonds as the single season home run king. Barry Bonds, as good as he was even pre-steroids, he will forever be marked as a steroid user, in my opinion. Maybe you disagree. But somebody has got to beat that record. Now, will it happen? I don't know. So that's going to be the episode today. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you liked, what you didn't like. Check out my Instagram, Rounding Third Sports, right on Instagram, just like it is here on this podcast, Rounding Third Sports. Drop a comment, drop a like, drop me a direct message if you want to give me a suggestion on something. I'll be back next week again, Saturday, for another episode. See you then. Have a great week.